You are Locked On Mets, your daily New York Mets podcast. Part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day.
Hello to all you amazing Mets fans. You're listening to Locked On Mets, part of the Locked On Podcast Network, your team every day. To get this show every day, follow us wherever you get your podcasts. You can also tell your smart device to play podcast Locked On Mets. Now on today's show, not going to do a deep dive going through this weekend's action. The Mets lost their series against the Philadelphia Phillies. They did salvage a victory on Sunday to avoid a winless week as a late Jeff McNeil home run put the Mets over the top. But what we're going to do on today's show, in the first segment, I want to talk about Billy Bean, who jumped onto the scene this weekend with some reporting that he is a candidate to be the next president of baseball operations. So I want to go through that story. In the second segment, I want to talk about a sad piece of Mets history that this team is going to try to avoid. This has the potential to go down as the greatest collapse in Mets history. So I want to go through some of the numbers I found on that. And then in the last segment, going to play the audio from a YouTube exclusive we had on Friday. Did not have the room to put the Friday Farm Report in last week's episode. You could have watched it all weekend, but I'm going to play the audio of my conversation with Jordan Grossman as we talked about some of the prospects you should keep your eye on for the future. Before we get to any of that, though, I'm your host, Ryan Finkelstein. If you want to find any of my work, follow me on Twitter, at FinkelsteinRyan. You can also find some of my writing about the Mets at justbaseball.com. So John Heyman has reported that Billy Bean is a candidate to be the next president of baseball operations. And also, if he were to become the president, he might just take his manager with him, Bob Melvin, which would give the Mets way more experience atop their organization in both of those spots. Melvin has been a very good manager in Oakland. Billy Bean, we know what he's done. The face of Moneyball. I would love nothing more for Bean to come in here. And really, I would hope that there might be a chance they could get Brad Pitt on retainer to play Billy Bean in the press meetings. That would be nice. See a little Brad Pitt come on Zoom. But in all seriousness, this is a very interesting story that has developed. And really, the entire list of candidates the Mets are searching for right now is nothing but big name guys. The short list that we know of right now, and Michael Hill has been discussed, but he doesn't appear to be on the short list according to John Heyman and others. You're talking about Billy Bean, Theo Epstein, and David Stearns. Now, Theo Epstein, we've talked about a bunch on this show, so we don't have to dive into him anymore. David Stearns, we've mentioned at times as well. He is the president of baseball operations for the Brewers, would be an amazing hire. But the question is, are the Brewers even going to let Stearns interview? He wouldn't be making anything more than a lateral move. They have him under contract, so that is really dicey. And then the Billy Bean situation is complicated as well. Bean has a ownership stake in the Athletics, a 4% stake. So how would that resolve itself? Would he need ownership in the Mets to come over? Is Steve Cohen motivated enough to get Billy Bean that he would give him a piece of the team to bring him over? And then you also have the Sandy Alderson dynamic. Alderson was Billy Bean's mentor. So those two guys, would they want to work together again? I would imagine so. It could be the perfect full circle hire that brings all of this together. If you remember, when the Mets hired Sandy Alderson originally back in 2010, there was that talk of bringing Moneyball to the Mets, that he was the original originator. But that he created Moneyball before Moneyball got popularized with Billy Bean, and he was going to bring that to the Mets. And I don't know if we've ever fully seen that, whereas Billy Bean has been doing Moneyball in Oakland forever now. They're always competitive. They were the Rays before the Rays, and he would have an opportunity with the Mets to come here with more resources than he has ever had to build out an organization the right way. When it comes to a reputation and a resume, I mean, Billy Bean's is as good as anyone's. His reputation is squeaky clean. All the guys that have worked under him, appear to be quality baseball men that haven't had these types of stories that we've been talking about with the executives the Mets have had here recently. So I think if they can pull this off and get Billy Beane in here, it's a perfect fit. Not to mention the fact that Billy Beane's baseball career began with the Mets when he was a first-round pick, and we all know that went sideways. He never was able to realize his MLB dreams and be a great big league player. It was a failed playing career turned into a great executive career. He could have an opportunity to come back to the Mets in a position that he's thrived in the sport for decades and maybe make this team a perennial contender for the first time in a long time. So I love the idea of Billy Beane. It's still very early. We're still talking about John Heyman's reporting, and Ken Rosenthal has also backed up those reports. So it's a couple of select national media guys who have gotten this scoop, and we'll see if this develops into a story that becomes something in the offseason. I don't think that there is a big drawn-out interview process to hire Billy Beane. I think if Billy Beane wants the job, you can get the job done and get him in here. It's more a matter of logistics. How do you compensate the Athletics for giving up Billy Beane, for potentially giving up Melvin as well? There's certainly a lot of moving parts in these types of discussions. I wonder if it would be simply a money-type transaction where Steve Cohen could write a check not only to get Billy Beane and Melvin in here, but write a check to the Athletics for giving up on them or moving on from them. It's just a very complicated negotiation process, and a lot of things would have to get ironed out. You can't at all say this is going to happen, but it's very interesting that this is the direction the Mets are trying to go. And clearly, Steve Cohen is not interested at this point in finding the next diamond in the rough. He's interested in the proven stock, someone who can come in, who has the reputation, who has the pedigree, who has the relationships in the industry that can build this thing out. And considering how this season went with Porter and Scott, you can't blame him for wanting to go that route. My only question is, even though this stuff is being reported, what's real and what's really going to happen? Because there was a lot of big names reported last time around, and the Mets landed on Porter and Scott. So why couldn't they get these guys a year ago, and what has changed now that will allow them to finally nab one of these top-flight executives? It's certainly the story of the offseason. On tomorrow's show, I'm going to have Pat Ragazzo on again, Mets beat writer, who has done some reporting more on the Theo Epstein angle of this, but I'll get his take on not only Theo, but Billy Beane and some of the other names that have been circulating. We're going to talk about a lot of different things, but the search for a new president of baseball operations has clearly become the number one talking point right now, especially considering how bad this team has been in the second half. Is it maybe the worst second half collapse in Mets history? That's what we will discuss in just a minute, but I'm curious if this sounds familiar to you. You've got one device that lets you catch the game live, another that lets you stream your favorite shows, you're watching your sports highlights on your phone, and you've got your neighbor's best friend's login for the other good stuff you're missing? Well, I want to tell you about a simple way to get all that entertainment you love without the hassle, and a great way to finally get your TV together. It's called DirecTV Stream, and it brings your live TV and on-demand favorites together like never before, so you can watch your favorite sports, movies, and shows all in one place. That means no more juggling remotes, no need to buy another device ever again, and the best part, there's no annual contract. So you get rid of the clutter and the confusion and get your TV together with DirecTV Stream. You can learn more at DirecTV.com. DirecTV.com, compatible as required, content varies by package. Hey Mets fans, this is Ryan Finkelstein with an incredible app everyone who buys gas needs to know about. It's called Get Upside. My listeners are making up to 25 cents for every gallon of gas every time they fill up. All you have to do is download the free Get Upside app in the App Store or at Google Play right now. Use the promo code BASEBALL and get a bonus 25 cents per gallon on your first fill up. That's 50 cents back. Don't pay full price at the pump anymore. Get cash back using Get Upside. Just download the app for free and use that promo code BASEBALL to get up to 50 cents per gallon back on your first tank. Some people drive a lot, are making as much as $200 to $300 a month in cashback. There's no catch to this. The cashback gets added right to your account. You can cash out anytime to your bank account, PayPal, or an e-gift card for Amazon and other brands. Just download the free Get Upside app and use the promo code baseball to get 50 cents per gallon back on your first tank. That is, again, the promo code baseball. So is this the worst second half collapse in Mets history? The gut reaction for fans would be no. We remember 2007, they had the division in hand, and for a month, probably the worst collapse, right? Especially if you consider all the context and how they blew it to the Phillies and everything else. But if you're just going to talk about what happened in the first half, then what happened in the second half, there's an argument to be made that this is the worst collapse in Mets history. Over the last 40 years, the Mets have had a winning percentage in the second half below 400, only six times. 1982 at 333, 1991 at 383, 2003 at 382, 2004 at 360, 2009 at 373, and then in 2012 at 368. For the most part, if you go through each year of Mets history, even in the bad seasons, their winning percentage is going to be over 400 in the second half. Just in general, it's hard to lose at a clip where your winning percentage is below 400. As bad as the Mets have been this year, and boy, had they been bad in the second half. By winning on Sunday, they changed the math on this segment, because before that, they had won 24 of their 61 games in the second half. So they had a 393 winning percentage. Now by winning, they have now won 25 of the 62, which is now a 403 winning percentage. So just by winning one game, that put them over 400. Still though, if you look at Mets history over the last 40 years, there's only been one team that had a better winning percentage in the first half of the season that had a winning percentage below 400 in the second half. And that was in 1991, where the Mets had a 575 winning percentage in the first half. Then they had a 31-50 finish and ended up missing out on the playoffs. But at the break, they were still in second place that year. As compared to this year, where the Mets were in first, they had a sizable-ish lead with the four games, and they fell off entirely after the All-Star break, and particularly since August. That is what makes this collapse unique. It's the combination of all those things. It's being in first place for as long as the Mets were in first place. It's having the winning percentage of 545 in the first half, dropping all the way off the table in the second half. That's just something that has not been done before in Mets history. And maybe they can salvage this season to be respectable. There's still 12 games left. The Mets can go 8-4, and you look back and you say it was a bad year, but hey, at least they finished out strong. What you don't want is to have another week like the one the Mets just had, where they once again went from a little bit of a positive momentum shifter, really it should have been a big momentum shifter, winning that series against the Yankees the way they won that series against the Yankees. And then they lost five in a row. And if you do that again, you are going to risk falling into a place that the Mets just haven't fallen before. And it's something that, again, if you look throughout history, there's been a lot of bad Mets teams. But the combination of being great in the first half to falling off like this, it's just very rare. Generally, what you are in the first half, you're going to be somewhat close to. I mean, there's a lot of Mets teams that had a 405 or around their winning percentage in each half, where they're just bad all year long. It's that roller coaster this team has taken you on that it makes it hurt so much more when you're watching it, because you had such high hopes. You had this feeling that the playoffs were inevitable, and suddenly it just doesn't look like it's going to happen unless the Mets just have a remarkable run where they can win a ton of games. They got a day off. They got two against the Red Sox. They got another day off. So there is a chance this week that the Mets can win those two games against the Red Sox, sandwiched around two off days, and maybe as we get into next weekend series against the Brewers, you could talk yourself into something. This division has been so bad this year that nothing would surprise me. And really, nothing would surprise me. Is there still a chance that the Mets will not be mathematically eliminated when they hit that final series against the Braves? It's possible. I don't foresee it. But if they play baseball the way that they did this past week and they finish with a winning percentage in the second half below 400, you're going to be able to make a very strong argument that this has been the greatest collapse in franchise history. And honestly, regardless of if it's that or not, it's one of the worst they've ever had. And that's just what has made it so frustrating for fans, because you thought you were beyond all this, and baseball has a cruel way of ripping your heart out every single summer. And then the spring comes around, the optimism is in the air, and you get signed up for 162 games of doing it all over again. You just hope that the next time around it's a little bit better. But one thing that could promise a better future is the prospects that are on the horizon. We didn't get to play the Friday Farm Report on the podcast side last week. We'll play that for you now in just a minute. But first, Built Bar is the best tasting protein bar I've ever had. It's the best tasting protein bar ever. If you want to try Built Bar, there's so many delicious flavors that there really is something for everyone. Whether it's the coconut bar, cherry barcia, raspberry, mint brownie, double chocolate, salted caramel, strawberry, orange, cookies and cream, which is my personal favorite, or German chocolate. If you haven't tried all the flavors, you can get a mixed box where you'll get two of each. You can see which ones you like best. These are protein bars that taste like candy bars. They come covered in 100% chocolate. They're soft, they're easy to chew, and they're healthy. Built Bars come low in calories, low in sugar. They're high in protein and high in fiber. If you want to try Built Bar today, go to BuiltBar.com. Use the promo code LOCK15. You'll get 15% off your next order. Again, that's promo code LOCK15. 15% off at BuiltBar.com. So welcome to another Friday Farm Report here on Locked On Mets with Jordan Grossman. Going to talk about a pitching prospect today that I think a lot of people are really excited about. JT Ginn, who is having or had an incredible season this year. What do we think about Ginn? What did he do this year? And what's his potential with the Mets coming up in the next couple of years here?
So this year was basically kind of a rehab year for Ginn. He just recovered from Tommy John surgery, which he had in 2020. Mets took him in the second round, gave him a $2.9 million signing bonus, which is basically first-round money. But yeah, he had Tommy John surgery March of 2020. So like Syndergaard, it took him a while to get back. He made his first start in June. They didn't really push him too far in terms of innings early on. He was maybe getting 3-4 inning starts in Port St. Lucie, but finished strong there. And let me just look at his season numbers right here. He actually, in 8 games with low A St. Lucie, had a 2.56 ERA, 3.93 FIP, 0.93 WHIP. The strikeout numbers aren't really going to be big with him. Like, he only had 8.1 K per nine in Port St. Lucie, and then 7.6 in Brooklyn. So he's never going to be a big strikeout guy. But yeah, he had a really nice year. Started a little rough with Brooklyn. I think he had an ERA around close to 5 in his first 3 or 4 starts, but finished really strong. Had the numbers here, 1.57 ERA over his final 5 starts. Fastball is 92 to 95 with a good amount of sink. Slider is 84 to 86 with plus movement. That's probably his main strikeout pitch. And then the changeup is 80 to 82, and it's just starting to become a plus offering for him. So he's got 3 pretty good pitches. And he's a guy who should probably pencil into the AA rotation starting next season.
And how old is he? 21?
He's 22.
22 now? So yeah. You got a guy who obviously a college pitcher coming in, and someone that definitely profiles as a starting pitcher. We're not talking about someone who's going to end up in the bullpen. As you said, to be able to get a lot of ground balls, I think it is his eventual path to the big leagues, right? To be someone that can pitch to contact, you know, mix up his pitches a bit. I don't want to say Marcus Stroman, but but that type of a pitcher, right? Someone who can really rely on his movement and his using all those different pitches to get outs.
Yeah, Stroman's actually, it's a pretty good comp. Because like you said, it's all about the ground ball for him. He had a 58% ground ball rate in Port St. Lucie and then a 65% ground ball rate in Brooklyn, which is probably top of the league for both of them. So he's not a guy who's going to blow you away with like 97 or 98. He can do that if you move him to the bullpen, but he's not going to be a bullpen guy. Like in Mississippi State, where he went to school, he was doing 97, 98 early on when he was pitching out of the bullpen for them. But now that he's a full-time starter, he's, like I said, 92 to 95. But yeah, it's all about the ground ball with him. And having a good Mets defense behind him should probably help him. I see him as a mid-rotation guy. You know, his floor is probably like a number five, similar to like a David Peterson. But yeah, I could see the Marcus Stroman comp being like, that's probably his ceiling.
And I think, obviously, when you have a player like Francisco Lindor, that's the cornerstone of your team. A lot of what you do is centered around him. And obviously, Ginn was picked before you had Lindor. But I would think that having a Lindor at shortstop almost makes him a more valuable prospect to this team over the next couple of years, because he should come into an infield that would be great behind him that can really help him be at his best. I actually don't think that it's a coincidence that Marcus Stroman's struggles in the season, he really only had one rough stretch, and it was right around the All-Star break, when Lindor was not part of that infield, and his best parts of this season had been when he had Lindor behind him.
Oh yeah. When you're talking about, you know, Peterson, Stroman, Ginn, those ground ball guys, they need top-notch defenses behind them if they want to have, well, they're still good pitchers obviously, but you want to have the best defense possible behind them every single night. I remember last year in 2019, when I was thinking about Stroman starts, I always wanted Luis Guillorme to play over JD Davis, just because you need that top-notch defense. But yeah, like you said, you know, having Lindor in place and having, you know, hopefully a guy like Javi Baez in town for the next 5-6 years, you have, and Pete's, you know, he's improved at first base too. You don't know what's going to happen at third. VR might be back, but he's shown he's a better defender than most people think. So, you know, a really strong defense is going to help a guy like Ginn a lot.
And when you compare again to the guys we talked about last week in Aller and Gordon, what's the difference when you have a player like Ginn who was drafted really high, as opposed to some of these guys who are a little bit older in these leagues, who are making the most of their stuff now, as opposed to someone who's a little bit younger at the start of their development?
Well, I mean, there's more room for growth with him, you know, and the Mets are going to prioritize his development over guys like Aller and Cole Gordon. Like, obviously, the Mets are happy with those guys, what they're doing in AAA, AA. But Ginn was $2.9 million. That's a lot of money for a second round pick. So they want guys like him and Matt Allen to be the top of their priority list to make sure they can have the best career possible. And he's someone who, like I said, he'll probably be penciled into the double-A rotation at the start of next year as a 22-year-old, which is still, you know, below average age for that league. So it should be interesting to see how he does over there. But having a pitching lab in Port St. Lucie is going to be big for Ginn at the start in the start of the spring when everyone's down there for camp. Should probably get a big league invite at the start of camp. His development is going to be a big priority for the Mets.
And I mean, we've seen it. If you can start the season in a double A rotation, it's not a guarantee, of course, that you're going to make the big leagues, but that's a possibility if you have a great year and if the path opens for you. I mean, really, a lot of times with pitchers, it comes down to injuries and when they need a starter, if you are pitching to a point where they decide to call on you. So I think it's going to be really interesting next year, someone that we'll be watching for sure. And if not next year, I would imagine that by 2023, you're going to see him in the Mets rotation in some capacity. Let's talk about a hitter now to close out the Friday Farm Report. We got Alex Ramirez today. What do you like about this prospect?
So Ramirez is a guy who's really all potential right now. I mean, if I read you his stats just off the top, it's not really going to be that impressive. He had 325 plate appearances in Port St. Lucie this year, slashed a 255. 323 on base and a 378 slugging, 93 weighted runs created plus, which, you know, is a little below league average. Struck out 31.4% of the time, had 18 extra base hits and only a 6.8 walk percentage, which, you know, like I just said, the numbers on their face value aren't great, but this is a kid who's 18 years old. The Mets gave him around $2 million in 2019 as one of their big bonus guys out of international free agency. But yeah, he's someone he was probably going to be a Dominican Summer League rookie ball guy last year, but because of COVID, things got shut down. So we had to go straight to low A with no real development whatsoever. So just seeing the kind of things he was doing, like he's a big speed and power guy right now. He doesn't show the power too much in game, but when I've heard when you watch him take BP, it's really impressive. It's like Vientos, maybe not Alvarez level, but like really impressive exit velos that he can post. The swing can get long at time, which is why, you know, the 30%+ K percentage. But yeah, a big speed and power guy right now, and someone the Mets are just dreaming on. When he's 6'3", only 170 pounds, so they're hoping he can fill out a little bit more. And when he eventually does that, they think they have a guy who can maybe turn into a five-tool star.
Yeah, and I mean, like you said, this is his first year, obviously. So if you have to understand that there's a lot that goes into playing your first professional season, not only on the field but off the field, when you're one of these guys who's coming from one of those Latin American countries, a lot that you have to adjust to. So I think that with the prospect like that, who's that raw, you don't worry as much about the numbers. You look at what you see with the tools, and hopefully by next year you start to get some production. Would you imagine next year he's going to once again be starting off in low A?
So it's a possibility. I mean, he's got, like I said, over 300 plate appearances in Port St. Lucie. So I think it's really going to depend on how his spring camp goes next year. I think if he's, you know, what they did with Mark Vientos last year is they put him against a lot of double A pitching. And I think he was originally supposed to start in Brooklyn, but they saw that he was handling the high A pitching pretty well. The double A pitching pretty well, so they decided to move him up there. The same thing could happen with Ramirez if he starts facing guys in high A and they see that he's, you know, really holding his own. He's someone who could probably start in Brooklyn next year, but there's definitely a chance that they put him back in Port St. Lucie just for the first few weeks to see if he's really, you know, grown and can cut down on the strikeouts a little bit.
That's going to be all for today's edition of Locked On Mets. As I said on tomorrow's show, I'll be joined by Pat Regazzo, Mets beat writer for SI. So we will get into a lot of great stuff then. As always, thank you for listening. Make sure you follow, rate, and review wherever you get your podcast. Make sure you follow me on Twitter at Finkelstein Ryan. Follow the show at Locked On Mets. And if you don't want betting to be a guessing game anymore, check out the Locked On Bets podcast hosted by your boy Q and handicapping expert Lee Sterling. Get daily picks, blowout specials, wrong team, favorite picks, and Lee Sterling's lock of the day by following the Locked On Bets podcast, brought to you by betonline.ag, wherever you get podcasts.